evening. It's just about 6 p.m. in the nation's capital. The name of the show is News Views. My name is Garland Nixon on Fridays from 6 to 7 p.m. Interesting thing happened last week. I was out of the country. I've been out of the country for a couple of weeks. And I got a bunch of texts from people about the show last week. And I'm like, oh, I think Kalia put on an old show, ran an old show. But whatever the case, people must have liked it. I did get some complaints, though, of people calling saying, I tried to call it. I couldn't get through. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, it was a recorded show, but so be it. I'm just happy, you know, I got positive feedback. That's a good thing. So I am back. I was traveling, as a lot of people know. I put all my stuff online. I touched down in Istanbul. I went to Moscow. I went to St. Petersburg, and I went to Minsk, Belarus. And interesting stuff. So I got plenty to say here. Additionally, when I do take callers, certainly people can call about we've got a Ukraine resolution plan that the Trump administration has released today. That's all the rage. Then you've got Venezuela. You've got all these ships threatening to attack Venezuela. And of course, you've got the Epstein files. And so we got plenty to talk about for those who want to call. The Epstein files, I'll say this, that in my opinion, they're scrubbed. They're scrubbed. They're going to release something. What if you remember what everybody asked for? They didn't ask for some Epstein files. They said, I want the list. We want a list of the names. Now, then the government people changed it to, oh, you want the Epstein files? We'll see about the files. We didn't ask for the files. We said, who were the people who did it? We asked for the Epstein list. And then they convinced us, well, so you asked for the files. No, we didn't ask for the files. We asked for the list. We're not even going to get the list, and we're not going to get the files. We're going to get some scrub documents that's going to have some sacrificial lamb names in there and stuff like that. It is scrubbed, just like when you do a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request to the government and say, I want documents about this and that, and they send you something, and it's like 90% of it is blacked out, and they're like, well, due to national security issues, here's the document, and you're like, but all the words are blacked out. Well, we had to redact a little bit of it. Trust me when I tell you this, the Epstein stuff, whatever they're going to give us, it ain't going to be what we asked for, and it will be redacted. And the reason it will be redacted is because they cannot tie it to what it actually is. The Epstein was not a bad guy. He was not just a pedophile. Epstein was an intelligence operative working for the Mossad, the CIA, and MI6. He was involved in gun running. He was involved in weapons running. He was involved in money laundering. He was involved in everything. It was a hub of illicit intelligence activity. And one of the many things that the Epstein operation was involved in was called honeypot. And that was, they bring powerful people in, they get them to have sex with young women, boys, whatever the case they can get away with. They videotape it. So later on, when somebody says, I don't want to do something, they say, hey, you know, would hate to see this videotape get out. That's what it was. So whatever we get, we'll pretend as though he was a bad guy, but it won't point to the reality that your government and other governments were involved in sex trafficking of minors. Yep, that's right. Face it, that's what it is. And when you discover, because see, there's something that goes along this. If people realize that their government was involved in sex trafficking with minors, it's kind of hard to put everything else past them. When somebody says, I think my government's doing this or that or evil thing, you know, every week when I say your government's up to no good, oh, no, they're not. They're doing the right. You know, the people. No, I think they're telling us the truth about this particular issue. And I'm like, they ain't telling the truth about no particular issues. Once you're involved, they're involved in sex trafficking. It's kind of hard to really come back to the point where you think they're telling you the truth about something, which isn't actually a fact. Venezuela, okay, they're threatening Venezuela, obviously. I wonder why. Do you think it could be because of all that oil? No. If you are a stooge, if you're a schlep, if you're, God knows, just some person who wants to really believe, then you ignore the fact that Venezuela has more oil than any country in the world. And you're like, no, I really do think that the United States government is concerned about the democracy of Venezuelan people, and Maduro's a dictator, and they're standing up against dictators because our government is really concerned about justice and goodness and democracy and the Venezuelan people. If you're a complete idiot, you believe that. If you're a simp, you believe that. You're like, no, it's, I don't think, yeah, it's not another war for oil. Granted, we've overthrown a lot of countries specifically to steal their natural resources, but not this time, buddy. This time, it is for justice, democracy, and goodness. That's why we want to overthrow the government of Venezuela and secure their oil fields. I'll be honest. I have difficulty sometimes even grasping that there are still people in this country who think the United States government is not planning on stealing oil from Venezuela. In fact, let me go one better. Before Trump left the last time, he said, yeah, you know, Venezuela's right there and they got out of oil. We could have took the oil. What do you think? You think that no, they changed their mind? Well, you know, it was all about oil before, but this time we changed their mind. It's about democracy. I find it difficult to believe that there are people still that believe that crap. And then when I realize it, I understand why America is coming to pieces. I understand why America's falling apart. Because if the people will believe these level of absurdities, the government can do anything. If your government overthrows country after country, steals their stuff, commits genocide, literally, look, how about all these years? If you've been listening to this show, what have I been saying? ISIS is the United States government operation. It's funded by ISIS. No, it's not, Garland. The government's here to fight ISIS. And I was like, I even went over this. Tulsi Gabbard. In 2016, 17, she put out a bill, and it was called the Stop Arming Terrorist Act. I talked about it on one of these shows, on a show of WPFW. And in that, she said, we're arming ISIS in Syria, and we need to stop doing it. In fact, she got in an argument in a debate with Kamala Harris, where she said, we're arming terrorists, we're arming ISIS in Syria. And Kamala Harris says, you're an Assad toady, you're an Assad puppet, you love Assad. And she says, well, we're arming ISIS. Now, a guy named, his last name is Al-Jalani. The United States had a $10 million bounty on his head because he was an ISIS leader. And now he's the head of Syria, installed by the U.S. and Turkey and Israel. And he was in the White House the other week. They dropped the $10 million bounty for his head, and now he's in charge. So, do you recall me saying that the United States was funding ISIS and that they were nothing but an operation of the U.S.? And they said we were in Syria fighting ISIS. And now the head of ISIS in Syria has been put in charge of Syria. And he was in the White House shaking hands, he was in the U.N. shaking hands with the president of the United States. Did you hear the Democrats gripe? Did you hear the Democrats stand up? Oh, my God, Trump, that's unacceptable. No, they didn't. No, they didn't, because they're part of the team. They're on board with the team. Go ISIS. But when I say these things, I get callers, Garland, you're standing up for Assad. You're, you know, whoever it is that at the time we're supposed to hate. At the time it was supposed to be Assad. He was supposed to be the bad guy. So people would call, Garland, you're standing with Assad. Now, of course, when Saddam was the bad guy, hey, Garland, how dare you? What, do you love Assad? And of course, Putin's the bad guy. Oh, my God, you love Putin. People are brainwashed. That's why our country's going straight to crap. Our country is in dire, dire economic straits. And you know the really bad thing about it? They can't even tell you how bad it is. You know why? Because if the United States government told you just how bad the dire economic straits are of the country, consumer confidence would collapse and the government's economic situation would collapse sooner than it is already going to collapse. It'd collapse now. If they told us, well, the truth is we're paying $1 trillion a year just to service the debt, just to service the interest on our debt. And within a couple of years, we're going to be paying two. And guess what? In no time flat, we will not have one dime for spending. We won't have nothing. It'll all be going to our debt. And by the way, the debt's increasing. So if they told you that, people would go, oh, my God, And then the economy would collapse now instead of later. But meanwhile, all they got to say is there's Putin, there's Maduro, there's Xi in China, there's new North Korea. All they got to do is tell you that there's a threat, and that threat is 10,000 miles away on the other side of the world. And rather than look at Capitol Hill, rather than look at Wall Street by the people that are taking us straight to hell, you'll be like, well, Garland, don't you know that we should stand up against Putin and North Korea and Assad and whatever other person that they give you to hate? It's just sad and pathetic to me, but that's where we are. Let me talk a little bit about my trip. As people know, a few years ago when I started hearing all this business about Venezuela's evil, Venezuela's this, Venezuela's that, I set myself up for a trip to Venezuela, and I went to Venezuela. And I traveled all over Venezuela. Not all over, but I traveled around Venezuela. I went to the mountains. I went to different places. I talked to people in the villages. I did this and that in Venezuela. I had to find out. I met with the opposition in Venezuela. I had the ability to do that, and I did it. And I met with opposition parties. I can tell you about the opposition parties. I can tell you about the parties that opposed Maduro from the left and from the right. Why? Because I went there and I found it out myself. Fortunately, I had the capabilities to go to Russia and to go to Belarus, and none of it was paid by anybody in Russia. None of it was paid by anybody. This was all covered, you know, this was on my dime, okay? So I wasn't paid for by the government of Russia. No. Now I do. A lot of people don't know this. I do a lot of international politics. I go on Wion in India. That's their Wion is a very interesting channel. TRT in Turkey. I go in on number of channels in Russia, a bunch of them in Belarus, a lot of them, some in France, different places around the world. So when I go over there, I'm oddly enough, nobody knows who the heck I am here, but I'm kind of well known in that part of the world, oddly, interestingly enough. So I went to Moscow. And tell you, and I went to St. Petersburg, and I went to Minsk, which is a country, a city in Belarus. Tell you about Minsk. Well, here's what's interesting. People are so brainwashed. I came back, and I had people say, oh, my gosh, I'm glad you made it back from Moscow safely. I'm like, Moscow safely is the safest city I went to. Well, I said, ironically, when I came back, my luggage didn't arrive with me because the planes changed too fast. Right now, this here's the ironic. After people telling me, oh, Garland, did you get back safe? I'm like, the safest city I've ever been to. I'm scared to go to East Baltimore. I'll get stuck up there. But Moscow is about as safe as can be. Very little crime. Minsk, zero crime. I said, but when I came back, so the airline said, hey, Garland, I'm saying they contacted me. Your luggage wasn't there, but it'll be overnighted to you. Well, it had to be FedExed. And since it had to be FedExed, somebody had to open the luggage and go through it. It was obvious somebody went through it because, you know, if you fill out the FedEx paper, it has to say, and I understand that, it has to say there's no dangerous stuff or substances in here. So, of course, they had to look so they could fill out the paper that. Well, so obviously, when somebody was looking, they found an envelope I had with $500 and stole it. So I went to Moscow, St. Petersburg, Minsk, Istanbul, not a bit of crime. I get back to the U.S., somebody robs me, sticks me for 500 beans. Took it. There's a black envelope sitting right there. I open it up. There's nothing in it. And everything's ruffled up. I'm like, doggone it. Well, My bad. I never stopped. I know you shouldn't put money in your luggage, but I did, and somebody stole it at JFK. But that's the thing. Did you make it back safely? Well, kind of, but somebody hit me up for 500 beans when I got back to the United States. Luckily, I wasn't going any other direction. Because it would have been a lot more, because when you go to those countries, you got to have some money with you and you got to change it because you can't change money, you know, rubles back and forth. You can't get them here, things of that nature, where you're going to get money for Minsk, stuff like for Belarus. So luckily for me, it was on the way back, a lesson I've learned. But here's my point. Minsk, Belarus is interesting. And feel free to call 202-588-0893. It's a socialist country. The people there are extremely happy. Now this is going to sound crazy. I didn't see a fat person in the entire country. I was there for 3 days, not one. Let's start here. They don't allow additives in their food. They don't allow preservatives in their food. They don't allow pesticides in their food. They don't do, what's that stuff called? High fructose corn sugar. Basically, you're eating organic. And they're very, and they'll tell you, they're very proud of it, right? Number one. Number two, they have really good, in Minsk, they have really, really good, what do you call it? Public transportation. But by culture, the people walk. And you see just people walking, walk everywhere they walk. And for instance, I went to, I was interviewed on a TV station. It was the biggest TV station in Belarus. So I got interviewed. After the interview, the TV station people, they're like, all right, we'd like to take you on a tour and we're going to take you to museums. Would you like to walk or drive? And I said, well, how far is it? They said it's only about a 40-minute walk. I said, I'm an American. I don't do 40-minute walks. No, that's not happening. That's routine. 20, 15, 20, 30, 40-minute walks is routine. And you see it. The people are all in good physical condition, very healthy, et cetera. Oh, get ready to take my... So give me 2 minutes, one more thing to say, and I'll take my calls. Moscow, my God, what a beautiful city. If you want to understand Moscow, go online right now and search... Moscow, what's it called? The Moscow metro stations. It looks like a castle. I've never seen. It's unbelievably beautiful. The city is beautiful. It's huge. Economically, I don't know what they're talking about. Some sanctions. You can't go 5 feet without tripping over a Burger King. You go in the store and there's Snickers and Lay's and every Coca-Cola. And I don't know what they talk about sanctions, but I saw everything American that you could think of was there, and European too. The restaurants were great. The food was great. The people were just wonderful. I really enjoyed my time in Moscow. And then St. Petersburg, it's the cultural center. I mean, I did a forum at St. Petersburg University there. That was fantastic. And they wanted to ask a lot of questions. I'll tell you one thing I'll say before I go to the phones. I'm going to go to the phones. Here's what's interesting. The Russian people do not dislike the American people. The Russian people understand that the American people and the government of America is different. And the Russian people are very kind, very traditional. If a woman comes to a door and there's a guy around, he's going to open the door. If it's an old person, that very traditional kind of people, old school kind of old fashioned people, very, very clean city. You don't see any homeless, no drugs, no crime, no trash on the streets. No, it's very nice, beautiful place. Absolutely beautiful place. Gigantic city. I think it's like 1,000 square miles. Look, you drive through the middle of Moscow, the streets, right? 7 lanes going in each direction. And that's not rare. It's a huge city. I really enjoyed myself. The restaurants were fantastic, man. Georgian food is the best. So I enjoyed myself. I do plan to go back. And let me say this. When they said Venezuela's bad and Maduro's bad, I went to Venezuela. I had to see for myself. And they're like, Moscow, Russia, it's evil. I'm like, well, you know where I got to go? Moscow and see it. When they tell me it's bad, it's horrible, the people are bad, I have to go talk to the people there, see the people there, see what's going on. And luckily, I had the connections to be able to do that. I went there and did a lot of interviews there, and TV interviews, went to college forums, you name it. I was very, very busy. Learned a lot, and I loved it. And guess what? I want to go to China. You know why? Because everybody tells me how bad China is. It's terrible. And you know, I'm going to take your calls now, but I'll say one thing. I've noticed a pattern. And the pattern is this. I'm told, don't go there. It's bad. The people are evil. The leaders are evil. And the people hate the leader. And I go there, and I'm like, the people are nice. The people love their leader. And the country's pretty darn nice. I notice that every time. Isn't that interesting? It's never the way they tell us. And I know because I go there to find out. And I've been spent time overseas. And oh, my gosh, what a wonderful time. You know what I say about Moscow? It's what I wish New York was. That's what Moscow is. It's what I wish New York was. But New York ain't that. Anyway, let's go to the phones. I am back and ready for action, ready to answer questions about all this stuff. 202-588-0893. First call, you're on air. What's your name? Where you calling from?
You know, nobody's really going to believe anything you say unless you say you go there yourself. so much into this Democrat versus Republican Party nonsense. And, you know, the subliminal messaging they use to brainwash the people, it is ridiculous. So I agree with you. Unless you go there yourself, you can't judge a place. But before I get started, I just want to say shame on Mayor Bowser, the D.C. council members, for not having those rental assistance programs up earlier. That's going to cost a lot of people that are facing eviction is going to get evicted because of their sloppiness. And not one of them showed up at none of those buildings that is issuing up these rental assistance. And they keep on showing. And I'm so glad that the voters are starting to wake up. Maybe not slowly. They're waking up. That the only thing that these elected officials do is live the lifestyle of the rich and the famous, and you're supposed to still worship them as celebrities instead of elected officials because they're brainwashed by the mainstream news media. They're not celebrities. They're elected officials. They're supposed to work for you. Now, the upcoming midterm elections that is coming up right now is going to be hilarious because I hear the Republicans are starting to get nervous right now. What do you know about that?
Well, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know. You know, you know me. I hate both parties. I don't know what's going to happen. It's a sad state of affairs, the pathetic state of politics in America. One thing I wanted to say real quick, it's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, people getting evicted and poor people. The last time I went to Venezuela, one of the things they were doing is they were celebrating something, the 300,000th free house that they gave away. Now, I mean, they were apartments, a lot of them in sky rises. But what they did in Venezuela is if you're poor and old people and women with children get first choice, but poor people can apply to the government. And if there's a house of apartment available, you get a free apartment. They give you food. You do not pay anything for electricity or water. That's considered a human right. And that was 4 or 5 years ago, last time I went, and they had just done the 300,000. That's how evil Maduro is, that they give free houses to the poor. And I saw it myself.
And you know what? I believe you. And this is the one thing that really ticked me off with ghetto Governor Wes Miller when he evicted a senior citizen family on my mind. And I told him, I said, look, y'all need to do a basic universal income starting with senior citizens, vets, and disabled, and women with children. Start with them first. That way help, because they ain't going to do nothing but spend that money to save their places. And like most elected officials, that it just goes in one ear out the other because they are celebrities, they're big time stars, because until the registered voters start punishing these elected officials, if this upcoming midterm election, if they all vote third party down ticket, that would send a clear message. But people are so brainwashed, I don't think they have the courage to do that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And you know what? I wish, this is me, I wish in the midterms people would vote for some other party or some independents or something, man, because you get Democrats or Republicans. I mean, people can vote for who they want, but come on, man. I mean, if you do what you always done, you're going to get what you always got.
And you're right. They can vote for whoever they want. But when they still fail you because they know that they don't have to do anything because they know the subliminal messaging of the Democrats versus Republicans. The Democrats, they know that they can mess you over anytime they want. They can continue living the lifestyle of the rich and famous, and you want to struggle beyond struggle because you're brainwashed to believe that these two parties are different from each other. Again, the best way to blow up the system is vote third party down ticket during the upcoming midterm elections. And the public is going to have to be willing to do that. If they will not do that, then the Democrats and the Republicans are going to keep playing the same old games. They're going to keep shutting down the country. They're going to keep on getting you distracted with this Epstein thing. I'm quite sure the Clintons are worried right now because I heard they've been subpoenaed, even though they.
But you know what? You know the game, Mike. I mean, they'll pretend like they're going to show something. That stuff is so redacted, so scrubbed. Anything that we really needed to know, they'll give us just enough to tease us so we'll think we got something. They're going to hide the real stuff. But at any rate, we got a couple callers. Certainly appreciate it. Great call as always. As I said, look, I always say this. If you want to vote for Democrats, Republicans, the Libertarian Party, the Communist Party, the Party for Socialism and Liberation, I support people voting for whoever they want to vote. It's your right to vote. But I say this, if you do what you always done, you're going to get what you always got. Don't complain. Don't do the same thing over and over and complain because you're getting the same thing that you got before. If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. 202-588-0893. Next call, you're on air. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Alex, Kensington.
I'm all ears, Alex. What's happening, brother?
I think that was Mike DC. I appreciate what he says all the time, and I'm glad he got a step up, because I'm going to ring off him on two subjects and then bring up my three. And I hope we get through the
question. Well, that's five callers. Subjects, man. We got a lot of callers. We can't do five subjects. Quick. But go ahead with what you got, brother. We'll see what we can do.
All right. So he said, riding off of you, one, I'm an independent voter. And the reason why is because I always have been. No, I voted for Obama accidentally. Because I do not take in what the two other parties have for their jargon, all right? Because it's a bunch of hidden messaging. So I do believe all that, and you all got into that, and that's great. He also said, like, I would really respect what you do, Garland. You go to Venezuela, you go to Russia, and you see it from the inside out. Like, I've been in the military, served in the Air Force as a conscientious objector, signed up to work on medical technology, and wound up, you know, 6 weeks later after basic training, you know, like, if you don't sign it, you know, you can get the heck out of here. And then, you know, that's what it is. Everybody lies, and it's up to you to see that perspective yourself, right, from the inside out. Yep. I'm not saying you can change anything. I'm not saying you can go to Venezuela and go to Russia and be like, hey, I'm looking at everything, and I can change it. I'm not saying you can do that, but you can at least be an observer. You can at least set the record straight, and I'm really happy that you've done that. I've done that in my life, certainly in the military, certainly on renewable energy, wind turbines, but I'm not going to get into that. My point, my question to you is, when you've done that in Venezuela, when you've done that in Russia, where would you say the line was? Like, you know, like Moscow, Minsk, all these places are really close to Ukraine. That border isn't really protected. That's why we're having this conflict right now, obviously, because a whole part of the agreement is lawful agreements. They were like, you know, the UN is not going to do this. And then what are they doing? And then since, what was it, 2014 or 2012, have we been like really just...
Well, you know, if you could go way back. The real disaster started in 2008 in Budapest.
Where's the line in Russia? Like, where is that line? Where is that imaginary line? You were like, the conflict exists, you know, like where the border is being challenged. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'll say this. It's interesting you mentioned the issue of border, because countries have two. Most people that don't study geopolitics don't understand that countries have two borders. OK, you have your geographical border, right? Especially a superpower like the United States and Russia. We have our geographical border. You know where your border is, but your strategic border extends beyond your geographical border. As an example, the United States almost went to war with Russia in the early 1960s because the Soviet Union was going to put nuclear weapons in Cuba. That's not inside of our geographic border, but it's inside of our strategic border. And they said, nope, that's too close. We'll go to war. In the same way, when the United States said, we're going to put weapons and we're going to put soldiers in Ukraine, Russia said the same thing that we said. Hey, that's not inside of our geographical border, but it's inside of our strategic border. In the same way as the United States starts encroaching on Taiwan, which actually is part of China, it's inside of China's strategic border. So when you get inside the strategic border of a superpower, you ask them for war, and that's what you're going to get every time. Go ahead.
What if China decided to just do what Ukraine did to, like, the Russian Navy fleet and just send a bunch of drones? And I'm pretty sure, didn't Ukraine also send a bunch of shipping trucks that were modified to carry drones and park them outside of airports and then just bomb the... Is that legal in the law of armed conflict?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, there's most people don't adhere to the laws of armed conflict. Here's where we are right now.
Cluster munitions in the case of the United States and Israel.
Yeah, but here's where we are right now. We're at the end game. It was obvious all along. Anybody that knows anything about geopolitics and war knew that Ukraine had never had a chance. And now Ukraine is starting to get smashed to pieces. And the United States is trying to make a deal and get out of it and try to end it. And I don't think it's worked. Ukraine, you know, I've been listening to me every week. I said, boy, they're going to get smashed to pieces. John Mearsheimer is back in 2014. John Mearsheimer said the United States is leading Ukraine down, his exact words, down the primrose path, and Ukraine is going to get smashed. And that's what's happening now. Ukraine's going to get smashed to bits, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. And that's, if we keep messing around with Taiwan, China will do the same thing with Taiwan. You can't come up to the border of a superpower and start putting weapons and missiles and weapons in there. Well, that superpower is going to smash it to pieces every single time. You get the last word, brother, before I move on.
When's the last time you went to Venezuela?
About the largest 2021, oil so it's been 5 years. So if it wasn't for a war, I'd be going back probably.
I would have went
this fall, actually.
How do you feel about the POC that just happened in Colombia? Because that's some recent news.
About the what?
The COP that happened in, I think it was in Colombia. It was a climate appeal, and it was like, all these indigenous communities are getting together. I think there was over 300 indigenous communities represented.
Yeah, I'm not real familiar with it. Unfortunately, I can't keep up with everything. But look, thanks a lot. I got another caller. So I got to jump to some callers. I want to give you plenty of good time. 202-588-0893. Next caller, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Brother KC.
Talk to me, KC. I'm all ears.
This is what I want to say. The number one organizing principle of any society is for war. The authority of the state over its people resides in its war power. What we must understand today, and it's not hardly going to be mentioned, is we're right on the cusp of the anniversary of the assassination of John Kennedy, which is tomorrow.
We got to make sure we hit the button. Unfortunately, we dropped that. People, you know, I think, let me just make a quick statement. And it's because people are online all the time and they're like on doing these online programs and they forget that this is terrestrial radio. The FCC would be happy to take us down. So please, when you call in, I do want to hear what everything has to say. Our last caller was touching on a very important subject, and that is that we are here at the anniversary of the assassination of JFK. And of course, more information's come out. A new document came out, more information from a whistleblower, that there was a document found in the CIA headquarters where they admitted that they misled Congress about the JFK, about what was happening with JFK, particularly what was going on with Oswald. It's clear the CIA killed the president. It's clear the CIA was involved in killing him. Pretty also clear that LBJ was involved. But at any rate, that's a whole nother thing. But at any rate, thanks a lot. And callers, please remember, we got to watch the lingo. 202-588-0893. Next caller. You're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, sir. It's Julian from Bullhead City, Arizona. I will not use any expletives at all. I won't use any of George Carlin's seven dirty words or any others.
Good work.
I've spoken to you before, sir. Yes, sir. I want to hear you talk more about JFK, but I have two questions to ask you. If you can answer those and then go on about JFK, because that definitely, my aunt was born the day after Martin Luther King was assassinated, because my grandmother went into labor. So that entire time is fascinating to me. But my two questions, I heard you speak about when you went to Russia and they loved them and they loved Russia and all of that. Where would you say, from the places you've been in the world, would be an expat of the United States trying to feel the warmth of other suns, like that lady wrote that book about, trying to see freedom in their lifetime? Where would you say would be the best place to go for an expat American, where they could actually get real democracy and real freedom in a non-war-torn country? And then my second question would be to ask you is, what do you think is going to be the final outcome in the next 50 years of the United States of America?
Oh, geez.
And then if you could talk about JFK too, great.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll just say this. I have not been enough places in the world. I know a lot of people that have placed people who have traveled far more than me. So, you know, I'm not a person who will say I can tell you where this is the place to go that's wonderful. I hear so many places are good. I've people that love Portugal, people that Moscow is, in fact, a wonderful place. I know people that are in Beijing, the places like that. I do know people that have lived in different Asia. I know a guy that moved to Vietnam that he really likes that. I have another friend that lives in Thailand. He really likes that. So it all depends. You know, you got Vietnam and Thailand where you got palm trees, great weather all the time, you know, year round, and sun and beautiful beaches and things like that. There's so many places. So it depends on what you want. You know, if you want a city, a beautiful city with lots to do and lots of art and museums and things like that, man, Moscow is a wonderful city. So I don't know. You know, there's a lot of places that you can be. And I'm not one to that I can tell people where. Now, JFK, here's what I have to say about that. Americans have to ask themselves a question, and that is, if you live in a country where the president goes against the foreign policy powers that be, if he goes against the rich people, the super, the oligarchs that we're not allowed to call them oligarchs here, but that's what they are. If he goes against the oligarchs and the people that want things a certain way and they kill them, is that a democracy? So that's my argument. People say we live in a democracy. I don't think it's a democracy. I think it's an oligarchy. In fact, there was a study from Columbia University a few years ago. You can look it up. And what they found is, based on their study, that the United States is an oligarchy. And the way they looked at it was they said, look, they looked at a bunch of laws, potential laws that were going before Congress and had gone before Congress. And what they said was, laws that most of the people want, do they pass? No. Laws that the tiny group of super rich people want, do they go through? Yes. And they determined that if a small rich group of donors want a law, they can get it passed. But if 95% of the American people want a law, they can't get it passed. And then, in bottom line, that's the definition of an oligarchy. And we get misled because they call everybody else an oligarchy, but that's really what we are. And I think Americans are waking up. Look at the Trump supporters, the people who voted for Trump. They're saying, I voted for peace, I voted for this, I voted for that, I ain't getting none of it. A lot of people I know are Democrats. In 2000, Joe Biden says, we're going to fix, what did he say? We're going to fix Obamacare. We're going to do a public option, and we're going to do a $20 minimum wage, and then on and on and on. None of it. The Biden administration did none of it. Didn't even try to do any of it. And what did they say? Oh, we can't because of the Senate parliamentarian. We can't because of cinema or what's the guy's name in West Virginia. They had nothing but excuses, but they basically did nothing they promised. And now Trump's in and he's doing nothing that he's promised. So is that a democracy? The government does not represent you. In my opinion, no, that ain't a democracy. No. Go ahead.
It's not in mine either. And then my question, the last question I had for you is, 50 years, I'll be pushing 90 in 50 years. What world will I be sitting there in my old folks' home going, what will America look like in 50 years, in your opinion, sir?
I have no clue, to be honest with you. I don't know. You know, that would be a bit of a stretch. Look, how about if I be positive? I hope it's a wonderful place. I hope it's a wonderful place. I don't feel real positive about that right now, but I hope so. That's all I can do.
After Trump, how do we know? Because Trump has been the catalyst that everyone says we've never seen, although we really have. What comes after Trump? Where does this work? Because you got Mondani in New York. I'm almost tempted to move to New York just to see what democratic socialism looks like for the first time in our nation, except for Bernie. So what?
Well, I'll put it like this.
What does America look like post-Trump?
I'll put it like this. Now, I'm different. I'm not a Bernie fan. I was a big Bernie fan. And then after Bernie got, they cheated him, he told us we got to vote for Hillary. Yes. After they cheated him again, he said we got to vote for the people that cheated him. And then he told us we got to support the party that lied and cheated and stole the election from him. And I've yet to see a war that Bernie Sanders is not in favor of. To me, he's a fraud. That's my opinion. He's in favor of war after war. He's not anybody I support anymore.
He lost me there as well. I agree with you 100%. But what does America look like 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now? What are we facing?
I don't know. It's going to look like 20, 30 months from now. All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate the call.
You,
we got to move on. Great call. 202-588-0893. We got open lines. Next call, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Randall, and I'm calling about the initial thing in terms of Russia, but I also want to address what you said in terms of oligarchy. But I'm going to try to do it real fast. The bottom line is the policy that the United States initially put forth was undermined by Republicans, and particularly the MAGA racist wing of the party that wanted to not see Putin defeated because they see Putin as some white supremacist leader of the world. And that was in the news many times, and that's where I got it from.
Can I ask you a question? Can I throw a question at you since we're having a little bit of a conversation? Doctor, you all right with that?
Yes.
Okay. Forget Putin. for a second. And I tell you why. Because one of the ways they bamboozle us is there's no countries anymore. They don't say Russia, they say Putin. They didn't say Syria, they said Assad. They didn't say Iran, they said Saddam Hussein. They don't say Venezuela, they say Maduro. There's a game that's played where we replace the country with a name. So here's my point. Forget Putin for a second. My point with what's happened in Russia and Ukraine is if you make Garland Nixon the president of Russia, I would do the exact same thing that the government of Vladimir Putin did. And I believe that so would you. If I was the president of Russia and I woke up one day and the United States started building bases in Ukraine, I'd blow them to heck. And if I was the president of the United States, wait a minute, hear me out, and then it's your turn. Just hear this, and it's your turn.
Yes, sir.
If I was the president of the United States and I woke up one day and Russia started building bases in Mexico, I'd attack them and blow them up. I think that the leader of any superpower, if another superpower started building bases on their border, they'd blow them up. I would do the same thing that he did if I was the president of Russia, and I'd do the same thing if I was the president of the United States. Go ahead.
Just say this, Miss Leader, because those things hadn't happened. What the United States was doing was bolstering Ukraine's effort to defend itself from Russia. Incursions into their land, trying to reclaim the land. And if you recall, until Congress stopped funding the level that they were funding at because of the Republicans, Russia was on its heels. Russia was losing. It was selling.
I would disagree with you. Well, let me ask you another question then, since we're having a discussion.
They had taken land back from Russia.
Can I ask you another question since we're having a discussion?
Yes, sir.
My studies tell me that the United States overthrew the government of Ukraine and installed a puppet government. Let me hear me out, and then you can say yours. And once the United States overthrew the government of Ukraine, the United States government pays the salary of every politician in Ukraine, including Vladimir Zelensky. Let me ask you this. How is it that the United States pays the salary of every politician in Ukraine, funds the government, pays for their heating? The United States pays their pension. How is it that the United States pays the salary of everybody in Ukraine, every politician, but you don't think the United States is in charge of the government? You don't think the United States overthrew the government? How did we get to the point where we're paying Zelensky's salary and everybody?
I've not heard that. But that sounds like a Putin-esque or a...
No. Is it true or false? Don't worry about Putin. Is it true or false? It's the only thing that matters.
I don't know that it's true, but I'm going to look it up. I don't think it's true. It sounds too far-fetched.
Well, let me ask you this then. I will give you my email address. Let's do this. You don't think it's true. I will email you everything to prove that it's true. Will you come back on next week if I do that?
Yes. Let me give you
my email address. My email address is my first name, Garland, and then the first letter of my last name. It's garlandn@gmail.com. Garlandn. Email me, and I will email you the evidence. If you don't think it's true, I ain't going to tell you nothing that I can't prove. Go ahead.
Okay, that sounds good, but...
I'm not going to tell you nothing. That wouldn't be right to me. That wouldn't be fair. I'm not like that.
I think I would like to also know those sources.
That's what I'm going to send you. I'm telling you. The sources of the United States government, but I'll send it to you.
The oligarchy part of what you're saying, this is my problem. I think that because of the fragmentation among, 69, I think it's 60, I've heard as many as 69 to like 70-something million people did not vote. And
a lot of people didn't vote.
If you want to know the truth, 80% of Americans, and this I'll use as a dividing line, makes under $100,000. So that 80% doesn't have the same motivation that people that make more. I'm using $100,000 as a cutoff, but people that make $100,000 sometimes are still struggling. So the thing of it is, I'll just use that as a, if that's about I think there's like 160 million working people. I'm not accurate this time. I'm just throwing it out. But it's enough people. If they voted together, they could have in office the 435 congressmen they wanted, and the difficulty might be the Senate, because the Senate is mostly 26 members of the Senate. Is elected only by 18.
Well, I throw this at you, because this is my belief. You know why so many people don't vote? Because they've had enough. There are a lot of people that don't vote. I know people that don't vote, and they say, man, it don't make no difference anymore. People who have been burned, they voted for Obama, they thought things was going to get better. Or they was a Republican, they voted for George, but whoever their party they voted for, they voted for the party of their choice, and things from go year after year after year, no matter who's in office, they just get worse and worse every 4 years, and people have had it. So a lot of people don't vote, in my opinion. Could be wrong, I ain't saying I'm right. My opinion is a lot of people don't vote because they've given up. They don't feel like it makes a difference.
You got to play the long game. See, this is, you know what? That's part of what keeps the system the way it is. People are counting on people to become disillusioned and give up. But I would also say for voters that get disillusioned and don't vote, you end up with also some people that become activated and vote. I don't know if it's a even one-on-one exchange. But I just think that, you know, this, you know, there's a game. There's not a fact that, like, only 13% of Americans, or what will become Americans, participated in the American Revolution. So it's always like a small number of people kind of controlling. But that's because the masses of people, and we're a little more educated now overall.
Well, I'll say this, and I'll give you one, because we got to get ready to go. But I think people have given up. I think people don't feel that the system works for them. I think people feel like if I vote and I put somebody in office, they ain't going to listen to me. They're going to listen to their billionaire, millionaire donors. And that's the way I feel. I feel like if somebody's in office and I say, Congressman so-and-so, will you do this? And all the people, constituents say, hey, man, there's a genocide going on in Israel. We'd like you to stop it. The Congress is going to say, no, actually, the guy that actually pays me and gives me my money don't want me to stop it. And they ain't going to stop it. And I think the whole Gaza genocide finished a lot of people off.
You know what? I'll give you that. But that was a weakness, because my eyes was opened up about Israel a long time ago. In fact, it was a person who was Jewish who chose to live in Ireland because he did not believe that the Ashkenazi Jews, which were Turkish people that converted to Judaism.
Well, look, we got to get ready to run because I got another caller, but I'll say this.
It's your show. I'll call you back next week.
Yeah, look, I gave you my email address. It's Garland N, my first name and the first letter of my last name, GarlandN@gmail. I said, hey, to you, this happened and that happened. I would be happy to send you links, to send you information, and to send you documentation. One thing I will say that you're always going to tell about me, if I take a position on something, if I say I believe this to be true, I will always be able to send you something, documentation, and say, this is why I believe it. I ain't saying I'm right, because sometimes we change our minds. But I'm going to say, look at this documentation and tell me it's wrong. And it's fair for you to ask me, okay?
Yes, sir.
GarlandN@gmail.com. It's fair for you to ask me. All right. Next, let's go. Next caller. You're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from? We lost our next call. Okay, we're out of callers. All right, that's good. See, that caller, to me, one of the reasons that the United States is in so much trouble is because the people are so misled, because the people have so little knowledge about what's going on, because the people in America believe things, and oftentimes they don't even know why they believe them. They believe them because everybody they know believes them. They believe, like, for instance, I said to the guy, to the last caller, the United States pays everything for Ukraine. We pay the street workers, we pay the policemen, we pay the politicians, we pay everything. They pretty much have no, and have for years. And no, I don't think that's true. Well, okay, you may not think it's true, but it's true. The United States, look, let me go one further. In 1998, Zbigniew Brzezinski, former United States, he was under Jimmy Carter. I forgot what his title was. Secretary of State. He wrote a book. You can look it up, called The Grand Chessboard. In that book, Zbigniew Brzezinski specifically said, we will use Ukraine to break Russia up into three parts, and then we can go after China. Specifically said that. He wrote it. In 2008, there was a meeting in Budapest. It was a NATO meeting. It was in Budapest, Hungary. And in that meeting, it was the Bush people. They offered... George W. Bush said, yes, we'd like to see Ukraine and Georgia in NATO. And the Russians said, that's a red line. And in fact, Angela Merkel said that would be considered a declaration of war. Okay? It's not like nobody knew this. The Russians made it clear. Now, William Burns was the CIA chief under Biden. You can look it up online, search this. There's a famous cable that he sent, and the name of that cable is Nyet means Nyet, N-Y-E-T. Nyet means no in Russian. Why is Nyet mean Nyet important? I think it was like 2012, 11, whatever it was. He was the ambassador to Russia. And what William Burns said was, after the U.S. says, oh, we'll put Ukraine in NATO, William Burns said, I talked to everybody in Russia. I talked to the liberals. I talked to the people that like Putin. I talked to the people that don't like Putin. I talked to the people that I talked to everybody in Russia. I could not find a single person that didn't say, you put Ukraine in NATO, we're going to war. That's the reddest of red lines. Look it up. Nyet means Nyet. You can search that and you will find it. My point was, it was not a secret here. Everybody involved in geopolitics knew, if you try to start messing around with Ukraine, Russia will go to war. In 2019, you can look this up. The Rand Corporation, funded by the Pentagon, look it up, wrote a document called Unbalancing Russia. In that document, what did they say? One of the ways that we can unbalance Russia is by arming Ukraine. So the United States said over and over, we're going to arm Ukraine. We're going to use Ukraine to unbalance Russia. But we know that if we do that, the Russians have said that it was war. And you're going to act like, then they're going to say to me, imagine this. Somebody says, hey, Garland, I'm going to go come to your yard. I'm going to come in your yard and steal your bicycle. And I say, if you steal my bicycle, we're going to fight. And then somebody writes, hey, I'm going to steal Garland's bicycle. Now, I know he'll probably want to fight because he told me. And then you come steal my bicycle and I fight you and you say, I didn't have any idea Garland was going to fight. The Russians told us. Angela Merkel told us. So William Burns told us. The entire geopolitical sphere. Look up John Mersheimer. Look up William McKinnon. I could go on and on and on. The research is... there's no question about it. Everybody knew. You mess around in Ukraine, Russia's going to go to war. That's no question. Here's my question I ask everyone. What would you do if Russia suddenly started funding the Mexican army? What would you do if you looked in Mexico and it was Russians running all over there? And the Russians were building bases, putting in missiles, tanks, airplanes, saying, well, you know, the Mexican army has a right to defend themselves. What do you think the United States would do? Do you think they'd be like, Mexico has a right to do whatever they want. They can join any military alliance. It wouldn't last for 5 seconds, would it? So why is it that knowing that if Russia put one single bullet in Mexico, the United States would blow Mexico sky high. But somehow we think that after the Russians said over and over that on and on, all the information said, if you come in Ukraine. Oh, by the way, why is that? When Hitler attacked Russia. What'd he do? He went through Ukraine. Oh, let's see. When Charles the 12th of Sweden attacked Russia, how'd he go? He went through Ukraine. Oh, by the way, when Hitler attacked Russia, how'd he go? He went through Ukraine. Everyone that has attacked Russia over history has gone through Ukraine. And you wonder why the Russians say you're not allowed to come in Ukraine or we'll kill you. It is existential to them. And let me tell you something. People are like, well, I hope that we defeat Ukraine, Russia in Ukraine. They'd nuke you if you did. If the United States were to win that war and to start setting up a bases in Ukraine, you would die because the Russians would use nuclear weapons immediately. In the same way that when the Russians started putting weapons in Cuba, the United States, we will start a nuclear war before we'll let that happen. So you better wake up every day and pray. I'm sure glad the Ukrainians didn't win, which they can't, but be glad they didn't, because you'd be dead if they did, because the Russians would push the button immediately, as would we, and as will the Chinese if the United States moves into Taiwan. That's just the way it goes. You don't have to like it. That's reality. Thanks, everybody. We got great music coming up next. GarlandIn@gmail.com. Follow me online everywhere you can find me. Have a wonderful day. We got a little bit of house music. I'm out.
I'm not. since I'm out.